KLYT Broadcast Studio. This is ABQ Connect. Your input on today's topic is important to us. Join in the conversation by calling 505-338-5790 or text 505-585-LIVE. ABQ Connect.
And actually, a little disclaimer, maybe I need to edit the beginning of the show that gives the text line. We may be able to get back to that exact text line. It is disabled at this point for one reason or another. We're trying to figure that out. However, we are all about you. And that hasn't been something we've done enough on this show. And part of that is prior to getting some new equipment in the studios, the way we did phone on the air was pretty clunky and not super reliable. And thanks to gifts from sponsors, including a gift from John Moore Associates in the last couple of years, we've been able to upgrade our equipment in the studio, including the phones, and how we do that on the air, how we engineer getting that on the air, and what have you. The system we had was state-of-the-art 5 years ago, and we were appreciative for it, and we're appreciative for what we have now, thanks to gifts and the support of local business and people like you. Remember, we are a listener-supported station, and you can be a part of that by going to klyt.fm. Now, that being said, the phone lines are absolutely open to you, and as Paul Gessingen for the full hour walk through various issues that impact you in our community, Paul is here from the Rio Grande Foundation to walk us through some of the blog posts that he's posted on errorsofenchantment.org. Is that right?
.com.
.com. Errorsofenchantment.com. And even from time to time, articles and different papers and other resources. But I want to make it crystal clear that we would love for you to pull up a seat next to us and join. Interrupt us anytime. Raise your hand with a comment or question. Please keep it civil. But let's have a dialogue. And if you want to do that, here's the phone number, 505-338-5790. Before we jump into it, I do want to stress the importance of prayer for Southern California. Here in New Mexico, we've had our fires and they're terrible. What happened in Rodoso and in other parts of New Mexico in the last couple of years, and people struggling to get through that even today. What's happening in Southern California, we haven't seen this level of devastation probably in over 30 years. I mean, this is a this is like a 30 or 40 or 50 year storm or fire, and it's going to impact a generation. It's worldwide news. And as Christians listening to our radio station, we know that many of you, your hearts are broken, or you may even have friends or family that are dealing with this in California. Of course, prayer is a great place to start. Anyways, you can encourage them with your words of encouragement, of course. But we, over the years, have grown to learn that Samaritan's Purse is responsive in areas like this. They continue, even as we speak, to reach out in relief efforts to those devastated by the hurricanes that came in this last year. And they're working in Florida and in the Carolinas and Tennessee and other places. Well, rest assured, they are already, there's feet on the ground in California in way of chaplains at some of the places people are being evacuated to. And rest assured, they are preparing for relief. And if you want to engage in that, by end of day today, we're almost there. We'll have a link to Samaritan's Purse right on our homepage at klyt.fm. But listen, you don't need that link. You can go to samaritanspurse.org and give towards those efforts, whatever you can, because it all matters. And thank you in advance for those who've been a part of that already and in the past and will soon. So I think I didn't want to neglect that, Paul, and I appreciate you letting me take some of the time to do that since you're our guest for the full hour today. But my goodness, it's absolutely something I think we'd be negligent if we didn't address.
No, I think it's absolutely important to help out the folks in Southern California and help them in their time of need. Obviously, people from all over the country have helped New Mexicans out in our times of need as well. So that's the way it is supposed to happen.
Yeah, and actually, by the stuff we cover here during our hour once a month, our intent is to educate the listener on things happening right here in our state. By being educated, we know what our leaders are doing and what our options are when it's another opportunity to decide if those leaders need to be where they are or we need to pick new ones just together have ideas on how to solve some of these problems. But I appreciate all that the Rio Grande Foundation, another nonprofit organization doing work in our community directly, riograndefoundation.org is the website to go to. And Paul, we'll start with one of the blog posts you have at errorsofenchantment.com on New Mexico, a mixed bag of tax changes adopted in 2024, soon to take effect.
Well, actually, they took effect on January 1st, so they are now in effect. You won't really notice them specifically because they pertain to your income taxes, and we really don't start thinking about income taxes even for 2024 until April of this coming of this year. So in April of 2025 or 2026, you'll really see some impact from these taxes. Now, this is a bill overall that the Rio Grande Foundation was not particularly excited about as it passed in its entirety in the 2024 legislative session. So, of course, passed in 2024, taking effect January 1st. Really, you'll notice when you sit down and do your state taxes in April of next year. And what happens? Well, there are modest, very modest tax reductions in your personal income taxes. A sixth tax rate, so we have five tax rates, tax brackets in New Mexico. We added a sixth and slightly reworked them so that you will pay lower taxes at pretty much any income level. That's the good news. The bad news is that there were tax increases that kicked in the same piece of legislation, a capital gains tax increase as well as a corporate tax increase. So mitigating the effect of these tax reductions. And then additionally, there were some what I would call corporate welfare or special interest tax provisions for geothermal energy, for electric vehicle owners or purchasers, solar panel tax credits, and advanced energy equipment, which is basically manufacturing of wind and solar in New Mexico. Taken overall, these are really small tax reductions. For example, just the income tax reductions are $159 million with the corporate and the capital gains taxes increasing by $77 million. So it's an $87 million net tax reduction. But remember, this is a state that entered that year, 2024, with a $3.5 billion budget surplus. So an $87 million net tax reduction is not exactly much when you're talking about the numbers that we've had in New Mexico. So a little bit of good news, depending on which kind of taxes concern you or your business the most. But yeah, it's truly a drop in the bucket and not, I think, enough to move the needle economically in the state of New Mexico.
Well, here comes my layperson illustration and how I kind of see what I just heard, Paul. You're watching a magician, and what is it where they distract you over on this end so they can perform whatever they're going to do to work their magic in the other hand?
Yeah, I don't know if there's a technical term for it, but that is a classic tactic of the magician and the politician alike.
And it probably applies here.
Yeah.
Probably.
Well, I mean, this was, all laws take effect, generally speaking, unless there's an emergency clause on the first of the year. So that is inevitable. But
I mean, where it goes to, hey, look, you're saving money over there. You're saving money. We're going to give you a buck over here and take 10,000 from you over here.
Right.
Essentially.
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay. It's still time in this segment, so let's move on. Another post at errorsofenchantment.com. Census Bureau, New Mexico among slowest growing states in past year. Well, why might that be? I could speculate, but I'd love to hear what you have to say, Paul.
Yeah, well, let's run through the data first. This is data year over year, actually collected by the Census Bureau starting on July 1st of 2023 and running through July 1st of 2024. So a year in data, they release it in December, even though the year is actually, if you will, the fiscal year of 23 to 24. And they show how various states are increasing or decreasing in population. Just a few states are seeing decreases in population, and thankfully New Mexico is not one of those. Mississippi, Pennsylvania, and Vermont are among the states that are losing population. New Mexico's in the next slowest growth quadrant when it comes to the states, and we're just despite our record oil and gas surpluses, we're just not seeing people move to New Mexico. And people do vote with their feet, people do make decisions based on a variety of economic and crime and education related data points. And New Mexico is just not fitting the bill for a lot of people, especially when you look at other states that are adjacent to New Mexico. So the top states growing in their percent of population growth: Florida, Texas, Utah, South Carolina, Nevada, Idaho, North Carolina, Delaware, Arizona. Now, Delaware sticks out. It's the only state on that list that is not a right-to-work state. Right-to-work just is something that we've worked on in New Mexico that would allow individuals to choose to join a union or not join a union. All the other states besides Delaware on that list of fastest growing are right-to-work. Now, Florida and Texas, two of the biggest states in the country and two of the fastest growing, are both right-to-work and zero-income tax states. And, of course, Texas we border. Utah we also border. Nevada's another right-to-work, zero-income tax state that is on that list. And, of course, Arizona borders New Mexico on the west. What are we missing? Well, we start with the population is going to move to states that have those free market, economically innovative-oriented policies and stay out of the way of economic activity. So if New Mexico and New Mexicans are interested in growing their state, growing their economy, improving quality of life for people who live here, they don't need to look very far. They just need to look at Arizona, Utah, and Texas and figure out what they're doing. Of course, they could look at Florida as well. Florida's doing a lot of innovative stuff, but we really have neighboring states around us that are doing things that result in economic growth. And of course, it doesn't hurt that New Mexico generally has nice weather. We can debate the niceness or lack of niceness of today's particular weather, but I can guarantee you that in general, New Mexico has much better weather than, Vermont or Maine or New York. We have generally pleasant environment, and yet still other states grow faster.
Now, Paul, this blog on errorsofenchantment.com, Census Bureau, New Mexico among slowest growing states in past year, this is speaking directly to population, correct?
It is.
how often, is it near a rule that, well, fastest growing states population wise usually go along with states that are growing economically?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So I look at this and I think, man, and maybe I've slept since, you know, an election, and as far as listening to people who are running for office or running for areas that would have an impact on this. I mean, have we had someone recently that was very vocal about running on a right to work and reducing or eliminating income tax here in New Mexico?
You know, as much as I would like to say that we had some people doing those things, they are not the classic platform for politicians in New Mexico to run on.
Sure.
That doesn't mean they don't believe it or agree yeah. with it. It just means that you get these campaign consultants and pollsters, and they say, well, if you want to win this race, you need to run on X, Y, and Z, not these particular issues.
Yeah. And pollsters, as we saw recently, don't know. Sometimes they do. Some, and there are some that are pretty dialed in. But I'm just looking at this thing, man, if I'm running, which I'm not running for office, and these were areas that I was, you know, for the right to work and for a reduction or elimination of, boy, I would sure make that vocal with studies like this that show population and with that economic growth. It just kind of seems like a, you know, a pretty simple. Maybe I'm oversimplifying it.
Well, but. You know, the problem politically is, and I'll focus on right to work as the starting point, because when you hear these polling data, you're going to wonder how the heck any state in the country is not right to work. This is data from a poll of 1,000 registered voters nationwide conducted May 14th and 15th, 2024. All registered voters, 82% agree with right to work. 10% disagree, 8% are not sure. Among union members who are employed, 79% support right to work and 20% oppose it. All Republicans, 86% support. All Democrats, 76% support. Independents, 80%. So if you're running those kinds of numbers in any campaign situation, you are going to feel very good about your chances of adopting said policy. The problem is, in politics, there's something called the concentrated benefits dispersed costs situation. I don't know if it's a principle, because you have these unions that collect these dues, and when somebody starts talking about right to work in any state that doesn't have it, what happens? Well, the unions get the lies rolling, and they start telling you how horrible it's going to be if your state goes right to work. They have a very big war chest, and they're very engaged, and their most engaged people are the ones that are going to go out and fight the fight and stop X, Y, and Z policy from happening. How do I know this? Well, in 2014 and 2015, Susana Martinez attempted to get right to work done in the state of New Mexico, and it didn't happen because of this classic problem. Because even though 76% of all Democrats support right to work, the Democratic Party elected officials who get campaign donations from those unions said no. So
So aside from greed. Quite honestly, is what, you know, aside from greed, for those that help make those decisions, this sure seems like an area where, boy, you know, we talk about, let's find areas where we can agree and work on those things and get that done. That seems like one of those areas to me. Hey, we're already past a break, so we're going to, past the time, we're going to take a break and come back with more with Paul Gessing with the Rio Grande Foundation, riograndefoundation.org and errorsofenchantment.com. We'll be back right after this on ABQ Connect. Okay, another, you know what, I'm going to say it, another great show on ABQ Connect. We have Paul Gessing in with us once a month to walk us through some of the blogs that are posted at errorsofenchantment.com. And of course, Paul, president of Rio Grande Foundation, riograndefoundation.org. And Paul, actually, since I mentioned the website and the blogs that we're walking through, there's a lot more than what we're talking about. First of all, you know, each month there's much, you know, these, this is just what in the last, I didn't even look at the dates, but this is probably just 2 or 3 days worth of, if that,
Well, you know, first and foremost, Happy New Year. We kind of missed out on that at the beginning of the show. Happy New Year to you and your listeners. Obviously, there's more material in a month than we could possibly talk about yeah. in an hour-long show. We also have the holidays, which, of course, we take a little bit of time off, and things get a little slower in the public policy realm, although that is hardly the pause that it once was. And of course, we're preparing, you know, once the new year hits, we just hit the ground running. We go from 0 to 100 at the Rio Grande Foundation because we're preparing for the legislative session and everything that's coming down the pipe at us then, which as you and your listeners can probably know or will know or be aware based on past conversations, I really see the legislature as the primary, most important body that people need to understand and be aware of in New Mexico, because the governor can certainly do plenty of things, mischief-wise or good. Same with the president of the United States and Congress. But in terms of how New Mexicans live their day-to-day lives and the quality of those lives and the freedom they experience, the legislature is, you know, where the buck stops, as Harry Truman would say.
Yeah, well, and a Happy New Year to you, too, Paul. Now, watch this transition. Here I go. You ready?
Boom.
Okay. Yeah, and, of course, getting through the Christmas season. You know, one of the things we did this year with, we have more grandchildren than I can count on my fingers. I have to start using toes, okay? And, you know, when you're buying gifts as a grandparent, that can really add up. And one of the things we did this year, which actually I think might be a more value than buying them something, you know, that they can play with or what have you. And in the long run, it may end up costing us monetarily more, but I think a much better investment. We gave our grandchildren coupons for, and we gave them like three choices. You know, do you want to go to a public pool? Do you want to take a ride on the a rail runner and go up to Santa Fe, or do you want to go fishing? So we're really looking forward to doing that. And there's my transition into the rail runner, which I have not been on, I think, since pre-pandemic. And I'm looking at a graph that's on one of your blog posts. Rail runner ridership rises slightly. What I've said about going on the rail runner kind of echoes exactly what we're seeing on the, on this graph.
Well, yeah, and there is good social scientists to research that shows that experiences are more related to high quality of life and happiness than our physical products and services. Things that you're buying and acquiring are not as related to overall happiness as experiences. This year, we had a little bit of a bug, as many people did around New Mexico and around the country, that flew through the Gessing household. So we did not make our way up to Santa Fe on the train as we did last time around Christmas. But in the rail runner, you know, counting game where we count up how many people ride the train on any given year, because that's a huge project, a huge expense that New Mexicans foot the bill for. Ridership on the train rose slightly during 2024 to 601,417. Now, some context there. That is up 2.6% from the previous year total of 2023, but it is well below pre-pandemic numbers. So 2019 was the last full year of Rail Runner service before the pandemic.
What year, do you remember what year it launched?
I've got that right here. That was in 07. And okay. I believe for the first couple years, it just went halfway up to Santa Fe because they hadn't even finished those tracks yet. But we'll get to that in a second.
Okay.
744,050 rode the train in 2019.
Pre-pandemic.
Pre-pandemic.
Yeah.
But I have data going all the way back to the heyday of the Rail Runner, which was really 2010, 2011, and 2012. The peak year was 2010 when 1.24 million people rode the Rail Runner.
Is that kind of honeymoon stuff going on there, you know, as far as, you know?
Oh, there definitely was. It was a new experience.
Yeah.
There was, as I recall, some free or very low fare opportunities to ride the train at that time. Of course, we were in a different world. The pandemic created a desire, I think a stronger desire than a lot of people fully understood at the time, to not have to get on a train that takes 3 hours round trip to get up to Santa Fe and back. And I think people worked very hard, especially the government employees, to either find an office space in Albuquerque, so government agencies moving office space, or find a job, or work remote. And we've seen all of those options really rise since COVID. But the upshot for us here in New Mexico is that the train is carrying less than half the number of people it did at its peak, which is really astonishing. It's also generating more carbon dioxide emissions than it is addressing or reducing. That's according to the Legislative Finance Committee, which said that from last year's data, they needed a 23% increase in Rail Runner ridership to break even on CO2 emissions. So with a 2.6% increase, we're still over 20% below or above, and no matter how you look at it, we're worse off in terms of just the CO2 emissions from the train running up and down the tracks than we would be if people drove their automobiles. So it is a huge waste of resources, millions of dollars every single year set aside, the costs set aside when the train needs to be, you know, the tracks need to be replaced, the train cars need to be replaced, which isn't that far away at this point. This is a very expensive
I keep thing. Hearing boondoggle in my head.
Oh, you are hearing the voice of reason there in your head, because it was a boondoggle at the time. We knew it. They could have put additional lanes on I-25, or they could have run buses from different, say, the Cottonwood and Coronado shopping malls to get people.
What would have been great if they added lanes onto I-25, as if when you drove by and the trucks you saw had New Mexico plates on them, the construction trucks. I'd love to see that too when we were doing work like that. And maybe that's a layman's understanding of economics, but it always frustrates me to see you know, all these large projects and seeing out of state plates getting the work done. That's a whole other topic, but
true.
Yep. Hey, we're up against a break. A full hour today with Paul Gesing from the Rio Grande Foundation. I'll reiterate what I said at the top of the show. If we're walking through this and there's something you want to comment on, you know, I love riding the train. Or here's why I think the train is necessary. Okay, well, let's hear from you. Or any of the other topics we've touched on. I'm doing my very best as a layperson, I mention that often, to represent you to our guests that come into studio. We've got someone in studio right now, Paul Gesing, the president of the Rio Grande Foundation, who's able to address these topics much better than I could with the work and study and things they've done to create these blog posts with information for you to digest. If you want to join in the conversation, the way you do that is just pick up the phone and call 505-338-5790. I promise it'll be a kind experience, and we'd love to hear from you. 505-338-5790. We'll be back with more after this on ABQ Connect. All right. Well, thanks for joining us on ABQ Connect. Hey, up in Santa Fe tonight, and I haven't looked at any road reports. Looking out my window, you know, actually, if you're aware of what the road conditions are like between here and Santa Fe, give us a call. We'd love to hear your experience going between Santa Fe and Albuquerque today. And probably not a rail runner isn't an option for this one because it's for an event tonight in Santa Fe that starts at 6:30. But Matt Baird, lead singer of the band Spoken, for those familiar with the band, he has some solo work that he's done and an acoustic set that he'll be doing at Mosaic Music and Arts Cafe tonight at 6:30. And the cafe is located at 1044 Don Diego. It's located in the First Church of the Nazarene in Santa Fe on Don Diego. They share space there. And not only will Matt be performing, we had Matt on Tuesday's broadcast, but Karen Lafferty, who really runs the show up there, is responsible for the great things that are happening at Mosaic Music and Arts Cafe, and is a legend in Christian music back to the Jesus days, the Jesus Revolution days. She's going to be opening with worship, and then Matt takes the stage after. Also, the cafe is going to be serving gourmet coffees and teas, Italian sodas and French cream sodas. So you don't need to bring some cash for that. But the concert is at no cost. If you're at the cafe, you're going to enjoy the music. And if you want details, the Facebook page is the place to go. Go to facebook.com/Mosaic Music Arts Cafe. That's tonight in Santa Fe, 6:30 at the Mosaic Music and Arts Cafe on Don Diego. In studio with us for the full hour today, Paul Gessing is here from the Rio Grande Foundation. We're kind of just walking through some of the blog posts at his website, errorsofenchantment.com, that are regularly, some issues regularly addressed there. But the Rio Grande Foundation, if you want to find out more about the organization in general, go to that website, riograndefoundation.org or errorsofenchantment.com for these blogs. The next one we're taking a look at, Paul, there's a report that the Keller administration, I'm assuming that's our mayor, Keller,
yep,
misused federal COVID money. I didn't yet read this, so I'm looking forward to hearing the content.
Well, it's pretty darn simple. The inspector general of the city of Albuquerque, so a paid employee of the city whose job it is to look for waste and abuse and misguided spending of either federal or state or local tax dollars, recently announced the findings of a report saying that the Keller administration misspent $288,000 in federal COVID relief funds that were meant to go to early childhood centers around the city, essentially helping them pay their loans off or their city, their employees during the COVID era. And that instead the Keller administration gave bonuses to 27 city workers ranging from $4,000 to $22,000. And this is a pretty open and shut case as far as I can tell. I don't understand why or how you would take federal dollars that were earmarked to specific causes, uses like these early childhood centers, and instead use them for something else like bonuses, especially given that the city has a very large budget and has a lot of money to spend. Use those federal dollars for what they're supposed to be for, not diverting them to bonuses. And
is there a list of I'm not looking for names, but is there a list of the 27 city positions that was early childhood development?
Well, this is, like I said, it's a report put together by the inspector general. I included a screenshot on the post of the information
that
I have. I have not read up on the full report.
But it's available to read.
It is available, yes. You could go to the Inspector General's website. And this has been referred to the U.S. Attorney. The federal government has taken this issue of COVID dollars and they're being misspent very seriously because it's not a unique problem. There's been a lot of issues totaling $9 billion across the country in misspent, fraudulent COVID relief funds. And, you know, it's happened. It was one of those things. I did not think the lockdowns were the way to go. I did not think that the COVID bailouts from the federal government were the way to go. But the federal government is seriously tracking these dollars and the misuse of those dollars. So,
do you know, Paul, the calendar in regards to the next mayoral election?
Yeah.
So if people are hearing this and they want to keep this administration in place, they have an opportunity to do that. Or if they think otherwise, they have an opportunity to do that as well.
Yeah, they have the next mayoral election here in Albuquerque scheduled for November of this year.
So oh, okay.
Mayor and I believe 5 of the 9 city councilors will be up for re-election. So, or election, we could see a vast change, a sea change in city of Albuquerque politics. And it may vary across the state in terms of when those elections are because several years ago there were changes made. You know, it used to be that Albuquerque had its elections for city offices in March, and that changed several years ago.
And is it fair to say, I mean, essentially the buck stops here. He's the mayor. It's his administration. Even if, I'm trying to, maybe someone in the administration that I don't know the details. I haven't read, again, the Inspector General's report yet. But, you know, ultimately, it falls under his auspices, his administration, and if it wasn't him who made those decisions directly, it's someone in the administration. And again, that's what the voters want, they'll have opportunity to ask for this to continue, potentially. Well, although, like it says in the article, pandemic, you know, we don't expect it to happen. You know, it's not a regular occurring event. And funds like this, actually, although they may not be connected to a pandemic, you know, there's federal funds that are supposed to be for things like in this circumstance and another circumstance. You know, is it happening in those areas? I don't know. Anyway, the other thing I saw here, kind of interesting in the blog post, is, and I believe this is one of your blogs, right? You wrote this.
Uh-huh.
Why is the city involved in early childhood in the first place?
Yeah.
I love that sigh. You started with a sigh, Paul.
Well, you know, it's one of those things that unfortunately, over time, something that was small and narrowly focused became bigger with government policy changes. And of course, at the state level, we saw a constitutional amendment to tap into the New Mexico's permanent funds in order to pay for pre-K, universal pre-K. But originally, this was a very small program geared for a relatively small number of families. Yes, it probably, if you had it to do over again, would say, well, gee, maybe if you're doing early childhood, that should be done by the school district, aka APS, not the city government, because you wind up with a whole bunch of duplicative roles and bureaucrats and administrators that have to be put into place and drive up the costs of any government program.
All right. If you want to read more on that, go to errorsofenchantment.com. We've got some more to get through in our final segment, which is just around the corner. But I do want to remind you the phone lines are open if you want to be a part of the conversation. 505-338-5790. And we'll continue with Paul right after this on ABQ Connect. All right, thanks for joining us on ABQ Connect. Cape New Mexico is preparing for an event at Faith Chapel in Albuquerque. That's on Girard, just north of Indian School. It's right next to the tennis club over there off of Indian School. That is, let me see, what is it? It's west of Carlisle. But on, you know, north on Girard from Indian School, Faith Chapel in Albuquerque. And let me tell you what it is. It's a State of the Homeschool Nation presentation. It's happening Saturday, January 18th, a week from this Saturday at 1 p.m. It'll be a live stream hosted by Homeschool Legal Defense Association, HSLDA. The event is going to focus on details concerning model legislation proposed by Coalition for Responsible Home Education. And afterwards, there'll be a Q&A with HSLDA lawyer TJ Schmidt that follows the live stream. You'll find details about this by emailing. If you have questions, email info@cape-nm.org. That's cape-nm.org. info@cape-nm.org. And actually, you know, if you want to find out a way to stream this in another place or at your home, you can reach out to them for that information as well. The State of the Homeschool Nation presentation at Faith Chapel in Albuquerque, Girard, north of Indian School, January 18th. That's a Saturday at 1 p.m. We have a little less than 10 minutes to get through the rest of our conversation today with Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation. Paul, once again, thanks for taking the time on a monthly basis. That'll include next month when we are well into session.
Absolutely. And bills are being pre-filed in Santa Fe. We are analyzing them already for our Freedom Index, and that's not really live right now. You can go see last year's and previous year's Freedom Index data, which relates to the performance of legislators in terms of their votes on individual freedom, economic liberty.
But when you do have that posted, it's the riograndefoundation.org website.
Correct. Okay. Yes. And that is where that information will be available. But we've first and foremost seen the governor's budget, which arguably the biggest part, the one part that they have to do every session, although much, much more will be done, most of it not so good, in the 60-day session that's coming up. But the one thing they have to do is pass a budget. And the governor had put forth her budget. The Legislative Finance Committee will put forth its own budget. So this is two groups of Democrats, essentially. One is the governor, one is the legislature, putting forth their own budgets. But the governor proposed a budget that is very big. It is $10.9 billion with a B dollars, representing a 73% increase from the final budget of her predecessor, Susana Martinez, back in fiscal year 2019. This will be the fiscal year 2026 budget. The fiscal year that we pass a budget for in this session will take effect formally in on July 1st.
Hey, Paul, I want to be real responsive since we rarely get a call. We got a call.
Sure thing.
So if we can pause, and I'm not even sure the topic, if we're going to be on the...
That's all right.
Probably not on the budget, but maybe one of the things we brought up. Let's welcome on to ABQ Connect. Thanks for calling in. Who's this? All right, our engineer's working on... connecting our call.
Hello.
Hi. Hi. Yes, I can hear you. That's okay. Thanks again for calling ABQ Connect. Who are we talking to?
My name is Rod. I enjoy your show, and I enjoyed listening to Paul all the time.
Well, thanks, Rod. We appreciate you calling in. What is your comment or question?
I've just ever wondered if that rail runner that, like you said, is kind of I'm not the boondoggler. I think you said. I'm not sure what you called it, but if they could make it more like when we went to Portland, they have a train, but it stops at the airport, and it runs probably every 30 minutes, so you can go downtown from the airport, you can get to the airport, and maybe if they got the tribal lands involved and had to stop at every casino and they could fund it, I'm sure some people could do the Casino Express and maybe even when they flew into the airport, if they could get on it and go to the casino or
and
a resort or somewhere.
And listen, some of our listeners are free to do that. Let me say this before the phone calls and emails start coming. We're not endorsing people taking the money that is put into their stewardship by God, taking them to casinos. However, I'm not judging in that area. I'm taking care of mine. But right. Again, before the phone calls come on that. But you bring up a good point. Paul, did you want to speak to that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, I tend to try, partially for financial reasons, when I travel to big cities, go on the transit system, especially from the airport. And that's a big cost saver for, you know, myself or my foundation, whatever it may be. Of course, the Rail Runner itself runs sort of kind of close to the airport, but you'd have to get on another shuttle to use it. And one of the problems with the Rail Runner is it doesn't run regularly in a way that would take people to and from the airport. You sometimes could be waiting for long stretches of time to get there. But they spent the money to lay track. A lot of that track that if you go up to Santa Fe in the middle of I-25, that is all brand new, laid specifically for the Rail Runner. And of course, that led to me and others calling it the Bureaucrat Express because the priority was to get that train up to Santa Fe. But I agree. If you're going to spend that kind of money, you should run it to the airport as well.
And to have a route, you know, a train like that, you brought up a good point, and I'm sorry, is it Rod?
Yes, it is.
Rod, you brought up a good point. You said Portland. Portland, Albuquerque. Paul, how much is population a factor here?
Yeah, exactly.
Portland has always been a very transit-oriented city, but they're by no means alone in having those policies, those projects dedicated to taking people to and from the places where the most people gather. The ART is another thing. It's a City of Albuquerque project cooked up during the Berry administration, which we're still dealing with. If they had wanted to do that correctly, it would have also been focused on getting people to and from the airport. We don't have really convenient professional sports arenas for transit. The one in Rio Rancho is not really convenient or conducive. Even Balloon Fiesta is not a convenient place to get a train to or from, let alone the ART. So this is not a very good place, generally speaking, for mass transit. It's one of the reasons that up until recent years, we didn't really have any of that, and it could have been much more cost-effectively done the same thing or better with a real bus system that, like I said, either went to Cottonwood Mall, Coronado Mall, or other big centrally located areas and taken people up and back from Santa Fe. That's what we recommended at the time. Maybe expand I-25 from two lanes each way to three lanes and really use that space. But we got what we got. It was partially because Bill Richardson was running for president at the time, thought he was going to use that as a launch pad to his aspirations, along with the spaceport.
Hey, we got just a couple minutes. Rod, don't go away. I do want to ask you something real quick before you go. Are you a registered voter?
I am.
Did you vote?
I did. Every year.
Will you continue to vote?
Always.
Okay.
Always. As long as I can, I will.
Will you vote in the smaller local elections?
I definitely would.
Okay, thank you for that. And first of all, I want to say how much I appreciate you calling, your question, and your comments. And if you'll stay on the line, our engineer is going to get your information. I'm going to go through our stuff here. I'll have a gift for you. And I know that's not why you called. I appreciate you being part of the show, but I want to show my appreciation. Stick on the line, and hope to have you on again. Paul,
I'd love to take the Rail Runner to the Isotopes. That would be nice.
There you go.
All right. Isotopes and the Lobos.
We got about 1 minute, and thanks again to Rod. And I totally interrupted what you were talking about, the budget, Paul, and I want you to put a bow on that with the time we have left.
Absolutely. So $10.9 billion. It's a 7% increase over the previous year. The state has $13.6 billion in revenue, general fund revenue. There's plenty of money for tax reduction, for returning some money to we, the people of New Mexico. The governor does none of that in her budget. I hope that maybe the Legislative Finance Committee will do something different, and that we'll have real conversations in the session about some form of tax reduction. I'm skeptical, though, because in the Albuquerque Journal, George Munoz, chair of the Senate Finance Committee, chair of the LFC, said that he thought that the rebates of recent years were wasted, which I find to be a pretty troubling statement coming from a New Mexico government official, where spending has exploded in this state, and what is it doing for we the people? Those rebates were handed out at a time when the economy was at a standstill, where people were out of jobs, where we needed some economic growth, and that the idea that returning money to the average citizen is a waste is pretty outrageous to me.
Well, you can go read the full article, Paul's blog, at arizonaenchantment.com. Again, thanks to you, Paul. Thanks to the listener for tuning in. Join us again tomorrow, 1 o'clock, as we continue ABQ Connect.